The Summit County Council meeting yesterday, and on the phone to review some of those items discussed, I have County Council Member Talladere on the phone with me. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the Mountain Accord Agreement, did you take a vote on this or just discuss it?
We discussed it and decided to put a little, kind of a, amended a little bit that allows us to back out of the agreement at any time. So it gives us that chance to, like we've had in the previous agreement, we could back out of the Mountain Accord Agreement. We could do the same with this agreement.
All right, but you wouldn't get any of your money back if you had already paid into it.
That's correct. So, but it would also limit, stop us if we wouldn't have to pay additional fees if we backed out of it also. So it gives us full autonomy of being able to do and represent the county the best way we can.
So are you in favor of the new governing structure going to this kind of commission board?
You know, I think it's a good thing for the county is in that it gives us a place at the table, and protect the resources of the county, both the watershed and the roads. I mean, we have a major artery, the 224 and I-80 through our county, and it allows us to be at the table to see what's being done and to look at what's best for us.
All right, I want to talk about some of those impacts that you just mentioned in just a minute, but how do you feel about the Wasatch back having just one representative?
I think it's still good. We're there with Park City, so I think it's still, we work so well with Park City, and, you know, it's still a good opportunity to be represented and to have our say.
And is Andy Behrman, again, the designated commission member then for the new board?
From all indications, Andy's done a great job along with Chris. And so we kind of think that Andy will continue to be that. We just have to put in the process of appointing that position.
All right. You were asking, what impacts do the accord have on eastern Summit County? Something you were wondering, will it impact water in the Snyderville Basin? Why would it?
Well, you know, our resources, water resources, are pretty important. And so I wanted to kind of understand the full scope of the committee, and where it kind of takes in the Wasatch back and the Cottonwood Canyons and that those resources. I was wondering, does it drift over on the east side of I-40 and take into those resources, which it doesn't. It basically takes into account the watershed and the resources there in the Cottonwood Canyon area.
Okay. Any other?
I just wanted to make sure how it all works and how it all ties in together so that I could understand a little bit better. And that's why I asked that question.
Okay. So you're okay with it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It doesn't go over into the Camas Valley or into Colville area, just primarily into the Park City and the Basin area.
All right, moving on. What about the green standards for county buildings? What did the council decide there?
It's actually a pretty good opportunity. What the county manager had pointed staff to look into, kind of having a baseline that moving forward, I mean, it is always a good thing to have our county facilities to be green and to have the aggressive standards that we have. We want it as we move forward in looking at new buildings or remodeling buildings that we have a standard that will give us a net zero energy, will give us a net zero waste, net zero the water, making sure that we have and take into mind up front the standards of what buildings are going to, our expectations of what our buildings want to be and how do they demonstrate that. And so staff did a great job in giving us a policy that we can go by when we go out to bid, that those standards are looked at. And 'cause it's hard to know all the new standards that are updated. And so we wanted to put it back onto the design teams to come back to us and say, this is the new and improved versions of what's out there, and have us come back and say, oh, we like that. That probably wouldn't work in this circumstance, but we didn't know about that particular option, and so we may bring that into our building so that they're modernized and we have the best standards possible.
So you're in support of the county's sustainability goals?
I am. Yeah, they're actually wonderful to put up front into our buildings.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess I'm going to ask, as the only Republican on the county council, this seems like that's an example of how Republicans would, you know, use unnecessary government spending, you know, where it's going to cost all of us more, but you can support that.
Well, you also have to be wise and prudent in what you're doing, is that there may be opportunities to bring something into the building process that actually saves money over time. And that's the goal of everyone, is to use our money wisely in having that money come back to us. So if we spend, you know, $10,000 on solar or, you know, putting tinting on windows, that comes back a hundredfold to the citizens of the communities.
All right. The council and manager comments, anything come up there?
Basically, we're rolling forward on the taxes, the proposed tax, and we're looking at that. There'll be some public comment over the next couple of weeks on how people feel about the transportation, and we want people to be involved in that.
So the council will be scheduling public hearings then before you to hear that?
Over the next couple of weeks, that's correct.
That's a requirement of putting it on the ballot?
Yes, it is. And we want that as the council. We want input from everybody in the community on how transit affects them and whether they want that on the ballot or not.
Yeah, what's the feedback you're getting? Is that something that folks on the south side of the county can get behind?
From what I heard, everybody's excited about it. We all understand the good gridlock that we may be in. We need to also look forward in the future and how it affects all of the county. And for the most part, I've heard great positive feedback on it.
The proposed tax levy for North Summit Recreation, this will be on the ballot. Not a large amount. Did any citizens show up and have anything to say about that?
There was no citizens that came up and showed support or against on that levy. I think it's just a good thing for the community on the north side of the county.
And just to clarify, does the ballot measure give North Summit Recreation the authority to charge a tax in general, or to charge this specific tax rate?
Just this specific tax rate, and that it would go to the recreation special service district. It produces about a $25 fee per average home, and the district just hasn't had enough money to generate the revenues it needs to expand different programs, or even some property that they had purchased several years ago. They just didn't have enough money, so it sat there and not being utilized. And this gives them the chance to give opportunities to the community for recreation, just like the rest of the county has.
Yeah. Did you hear from a presentation from district members at all about how they would spend the money if, in fact, the bond is approved?
I think it's just basically enhancing. They have activities for kids, but this would enhance opportunities for adults to, you know, softball fields and things like that, able the community to get out and enjoy their activities.
All right. Tal, anything else?
Yeah, a couple of things. There's a couple of vacancies that we want everybody to remember about. Summit County Restaurant Tax Advisory Committee is looking for an individual to be on that committee. And also the Summit County Arts and Park Advisory Committee is looking for five individuals And those applications have to be in by August 17th, just next week. So we'd like the community to get out, and if they'd like to be on those communities committees to get their applications in.
Okay. All that is on the website?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Tal, thanks for your time this morning.
You bet. Thank you.
That's Summit County Councilmember Tal Adair. KPCW News Time, 8:31 now. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Planning Commission met for the third time to discuss the Treasure Project. This month's discussion focusing on the size and density. In the studio with a recap of last night's meeting, I have Adam Strong. He's the chairman of the Park City Planning Commission. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning.
So last night, Planning Commissioner Steve Joyce remarked that there's a whole bunch of confusion about what density the project has or how much vesting it has. So from your point of view, is the fog clearing here?
I think it's clearing. Commissioner Joyce is correct. There's still confusion. You know, at the end of the day, we're going to have to arrive at a conclusion on that. And last night we had a discussion as commissioners about the applicant's application says it's 1 million square feet plus. And in the context of a CUP application, we will need to decide whether that is acceptable or not, up or down vote. And my comment on that was, well, if we vote that down, we have to have a reason why. And to me, that means arriving at our own density calculations and saying you're not entitled to a million. What we find is you're entitled to something different than that, and the number is X. Now, how we get there is probably where the cloudiness and fog are, but I think we're making headway.
Last night you said you agreed with Commissioner Susser's calculation of the density. She came up with 628,000 plus square feet. Why do you agree with that calculation?
I think her methodology is correct, and what she did was take the UEs. There's a square footage assigned to each UE. She took that UE, square footage assignment, then she added the parking, and then which has also been approved, and she added the 5% for back of house and then arrived at that number. And I think that methodology is correct. I think where the sticking point is once you arrive at that, you have to analyze the impacts of that much square footage and how they're mitigated. So although it's 600,000 some odd square feet she arrives at, that might not be the end of the game number because they need to mitigate their impacts after that.
So how soon do you think we'll hear each planning commissioner put forward a density number?
Well, we sort of arrived at a goal of doing that the meeting after next. The next meeting will be the site visit, and staff is coming back to us with a volumetrics analysis, and the applicant is coming back to us with some answers to questions posed by both the commissioners and public. Once we have all that data, I think in the meeting after next, we'll be in a position to come to numbers. Now, those numbers may be different from planning commissioner to planning commissioner, but at least we will have arrived at some type of working point from which we can proceed.
So as you understand it, what's Treasure's rationale for getting to that million-plus square feet?
Well, I'm still a little confused about that myself, and I think one of the things I was looking for last night and didn't receive from the applicant was some real specifics. We got a lot of talk about how the original 1985 Planning Commission and 1986 City Council envisioned, quote, massive projects or, quote, skyscraper-style hotels. And those terms are, in fact, in the NPD. But those are just terms. Those aren't numbers. And I know that the applicant has submitted a great deal of analysis and numbers on how they arrive at their 1 million square feet. Staff has disagreed with many of those. So has the Planning Commission. And so I am waiting for the applicant's response as to why they think the staff's calculation is incorrect and why they think our at least our initial estimations as planning commissioners are incorrect. Well, you know, yes and no. I think those are different projects in different places, and the impacts are different. You know, it's this project is in the middle of Old Town and has some very, very unique impacts as a result of that. Those impacts are much, much different than the Montage, which is not in the middle of Old Town. I think it's a helpful reference point. It's a helpful data point, but it is not the end-all, be-all of the analysis. And so I guess yes and no is the answer to that question.
Also, last night you said that it's looking more and more possible that if Treasure wants more density, the MPD will have to ask for an amendment. You said that will open a can of worms, I guess, to put it mildly. Why would an amendment be needed?
Well, let me back up a little bit and explain kind of what the problem is. The question is whether they are going to try to invoke some other code besides the 1985 Land Management Code in order to gain density in the project. And if they do that, then they are arguably subject to opening the MPD. I think the section is 1.22 under the old 85 Land Management Code, which talks about vesting. So they need to decide whether they are going to invoke some other code besides that and whether they're going to trigger that vesting provision in the old code and reopen the MPD. I doubt they're going to do that, but we haven't gotten a firm answer from them on it.
Treasurer's attorney says that Park City knew exactly what it was getting when it approved this development some 30 years ago. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think the evidence is mixed. I think Commissioner Joyce is correct insofar as he says it's not evidentiarily based to say that the MPD document and the Woodruff drawings necessarily equate to a square foot number that is fixed. I think he's right. You can't just look at those drawings and say, all right, there it is, 850,000 square feet. We got it. And I don't think that's what either the 85 Planning Commission did or the 86 City Council. So in that regard, I think he's right. However, I do think that the square footage allotted to the UEs was very well understood by the Planning Commission and the City Council. The UEs had square footage assignments associated with them, and those public officials knew those very well.
Are you and the Planning Commission then swayed at all when you hear former council members and planning commissioners say that they expected a 400,000-square-foot project?
I think that's evidence of the intent of the MPD. You know, if the applicant is going to argue, as they did last night, that Park City knew what it had approved and knew what it was getting into, they sort of open the door to the old planning commissioners and city council members coming forth and giving public comments saying, that isn't what we envisioned. That isn't what we thought. So to the extent the applicant argues that, I think the old planning commissioners and city council's comments are relevant.
And then to Rich Wyman's comment, have we seen any compromise, any give and take on Treasurer's side?
Well, you know, there's been a long history of negotiations, some of which are confidential that not even myself was privy to. But, you know, this is a CUP application, and they have put forth their proposal. And, you know, they are entitled to an up or down vote on this. They don't necessarily have to compromise. Whether their refusal to do so is in their best interest is something for the applicant to decide. But the way the application process works and the way the code is structured, they can put this before us, they can ask for a vote on it, and we'll give them one.
And just wanted to get your take on the extensive excavating on this site. That's something we're hearing a lot about now.
Yeah, I think that's one of the bigger issues we're going to be tackling, and it's an issue that, you know, we haven't had staff analysis on yet because we haven't focused necessarily on that issue. It's an issue that sort of underlies a lot of others, particularly density. But we need to get some staff analysis on exactly how many cubic yards of excavation we're talking about, how deep the cuts are going to be. We have some of that now, but, you know, we need to bring that home and understand exactly what we're talking about because, again, we need to figure out if and how those impacts can be mitigated.
All right. So, again, you mentioned next month, September 14th, it's going to be a site visit, and then you come back to the Santee for discussion? Is that how it's going to work?
Yep.
All right. And then we're also going to continue the talk of density, size, and scale, or do we move on to another topic?
We're going to continue the discussion of density, size, and scale at the September 14th meeting, and then the meeting, as I said earlier, following that will be the one where we at least try to reach close to a conclusion as we can, understanding that the conclusions we may or may not reach on density may change as the meeting process goes forward because, as I said, they need to mitigate their impacts. So we could arrive at some type of square footage conclusion, but that doesn't take into account the traffic impacts, for instance, that would have to be mitigated and could further reduce the square footage assessment. So that won't be the last of this.
All right. Any other takeaways from last night's meeting you want to share?
No, except that I thought the public comment last night was absolutely fantastic, very fact-based, evidentiary, not a lot of public clamor, not a lot of hyperbole about how it's just awful and terrible and massive. We got some real evidence about the impacts of this, and I appreciate that.
All right, Adam, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Adam Strong is the chairman of the Park City Planning Commission. News time now, 8:43.
This is Mark with Esko Heating, Air, Plumbing, and Electrical, and we are proud to sponsor the Marketplace Morning Report on KPCW. Esko offers heating, air conditioning, plumbing, and electrical, service, repair, or replacement. EskoUtah.com, 855-ESKO-NOW. That's E-S-C-O, Esko.
There she blows!
What's happening, Captain?
Heave-ho, mateys! Raise the mainsail! The KPCW treasure we seek is just ahead!
Is it a fundraiser?
According to this here treasure map, there's a strange new twist to this year's pledge drive.
What's new? What's new?
Tune in to your treasured KPCW fundraiser August 22nd to 25th for booty galore and to ransom your beloved public radio station from a fundraiser's watery grave.
Hi, I'm Beth Armstrong, director of the Promontory Foundation, a nonprofit charitable organization established by Promontory. We are pleased to support KPCW. Supporting Park City and Summit County nonprofits, the Promontory Foundation seeks to make a positive impact on conservation and family through charitable giving through Promontory and its members. Please visit PromontoryClub.com to find out more.
Well, in the studio now with a look at building in Park City, I have Chief Building Official Chad Root. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. So what kind of building season are we seeing? I know that you've got a glitch with kind of your reporting software. So
yeah, our reporting software is kind of down. It doesn't like changes, either do some of us. But anyway, it's not compiling the data that we normally get out to you. But I would say that we're pretty comparable with last year as far as our numbers. A lot more smaller permits coming in, remodels, new decks, that sort of probably the permit process. We're busy at the counter every morning as people come by. They can see that we have a lineup sometimes out the front door with permits. They're usually, like I mentioned, smaller permits, remodels. But at the same time, you know, it's a permit. It takes a little longer time.
So what's the deal with that? I mean, how come you guys only process permits 2 hours a day?
The situation is we're kind of in a state of purgatory. We're looking at a new software program that will help us out. Where hopefully with the new software program, we can actually people from their home can apply for permits online and use a credit card. A lot of small municipalities. I was talking with a contractor the other day. He was doing a home over in Deschene County, and he's never even seen the building department over there, never even seen the site, but he actually submitted everything online and paid for the permit, and got notification about 2 weeks later that the permit was ready to go, and he was going over to the site. He paid everything online. The plans came bounced back and forth a couple times with corrections. That's the route that we're looking at going. I had Derek Kohler, one of our senior inspectors. He was with Wasatch County yesterday looking at their systems to see, you know, how it works as well. And theirs is very similar in a lot of ways. It's just, unfortunately, our permitting program is it was more designed for finance, and it's not as user-friendly as we want. And we replicate things quite a bit. So somebody will come in at the counter, they'll fill out the form, and then the gals at the counter will take it and they'll have to type it in. And same thing with the plans. They'll bring in a set of plans. And once the plans have been marked up, then we have to scan them into the system before we give them back. Versus if we're, you know, it's kind of like sitting on the fence. You know, it's hard to sit on the fence and being pulled two different directions versus if we were just to hop off the fence and go all electronic, it would save a lot of time because there wouldn't be this duplication.
Yeah, so contractors then would be able to scan their own plans and then email them to you? Because I know that that was one complaint I had heard. It took 5 days to even get the piece, you know, the blueprint scanned.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually what would take place is a lot of the times their architects would actually just send it in electronically. We would make notes, send it back electronically to the architect. And it just speeds up that process that much because if you think about it, if you can do it real time instead of marking up the set of plans and sending it on the counter, calling up the architect or whoever to come pick up your plans, mostly if they're in the Salt Lake Valley. And that's been a lot of the complaints that we've received is the subcontractors coming up from Salt Lake Valley, they have to come up, apply for the permit versus they could have done it down in Salt Lake Valley if it was electronically.
Yeah, but I'd also heard that you used to have 3 or 4 staff members at the desk. Now you're down to like 2. Is that an understaffing problem, or
we're at 2, and we have a part-time person coming in helping with the scanning. But yeah, for the way that we're set up, the 3 made sense. It really did because of how the program's set up, where we have to do multiple steps on it. If we were to go electronically, then 2 would be perfect. Yeah.
And you would just still keep those 2 hours in the morning, or could you open it up all day?
You know, possibly we could actually open it up all day. You know, I do have to give the staff a little bit of time in the afternoon where they can actually process a permit. So in the morning, we're taking in the permits. There's a lot of grandma requests that come in that a lot of people don't think about. We're inundated with grandma requests on buildings. And what that is just an information act as far as, hey, what took place in this building with building plans, planning issues. And so a lot of people are coming in and asking for that. And we have to turn those out within 10 days by state guidelines. So that kind of takes a precedence as well.
Yeah. What about your inspecting staff? Are you still up to speed there, or are you continuing to lose them to other communities? Or?
So we haven't lost anyone. We had 6 positions earlier on, but we didn't have the financial means to keep all 6 positions. We had 4 full-time inspector positions and 2 contract inspector positions. We had to eliminate the 2 contract inspector positions due to a lack of funds coming in. We didn't bring in as much money as we thought we would through the building permit process. So we're down to 4 inspectors and 1 inspector supervisor. And it's once in a while we do have to roll, but we have changed our fee schedule a little bit and hoping that we can bring in a little more revenue to bring back maybe 1 contract inspector to help out with the bumps.
Okay. What's the latest on plans? We were talking about perhaps banning wood-burning devices in Park City.
You know, that's kind of taken a stall. I haven't heard any more on it, and I don't know why. I think it's probably a good thing to do. It's we're at that point as a community, as we're growing, and if everyone was to have a wood-burning device in the basin, you know, on the Wasatch back here, we would start having our own form of inversion. So I'm not sure where that's at. I know the county's going, moving forward on it. And once we get the word, we're willing to participate in that as well.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, just a couple other items. Starting October 1st, we are going to – Park City Building Department's going to implement the same sort of policy that Wasatch County has, that we are not taking any deferred submittals for single-family residential plans. One of the reasons we're doing this is deferred submittals. So if somebody brings in a set of plans, but they don't have the full set of plans, they're missing mechanical, they're missing engineering or some structurals, and then they come back later on. This slows down the plan review process. And also, at the end, it also brings in some surprises, costly surprises to the owners, because they had kind of a certain set of plans or something in mind. And now, because they added the additional square footage, they may need a 2-inch water line instead of the 1-inch water line that they thought they could have. And this comes in after the fact. So what we're trying to do is have, if you're submitting a full set of plans, it needs to be a full set of plans. Everything needs to be included. And I know Wasatch County has done that as well. The other topic I just wanted to discuss real fast is that we have adopted July 1st. It's the 2006 Utah Wildland Urban Interface Code. And if you have any questions on it, feel free to contact me, come and talk to me in the office. We're doing pre-site inspections for a lot of these properties for defensible space. And basically, the rule of thumb is if you're over $50,000 in a permit valuation, it could be interior remodel, it could be exterior work. At that point, that $50,000 triggers defensible space, where we'll come out, take a look at vegetation on the site. And the whole purpose of this is to protect you from your neighbors and your neighbors from you if your house catches on fire, and during the worst-case situations, wildland fire, to make sure that there's enough defensible space where the fire cools down, it doesn't catch your property on fire. It gets pretty costly, as we've seen in a lot of communities, you know, that it moves through real fast, burns the homes. So that's implemented. New construction has to comply as well.
Okay. Hey, Chad, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thank you very much.
It's Chad Root, Park City Chief Building Official, Newstime 853.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, presenting Viridian, 21 new residences along the 11th fairway of the Canyons Golf Course, with year-round amenities and gondola access. Summers on the fairway, winters on the slopes. More information at ViridianParkCity.com.
Executive Chef Todd Cosgrove here with Park Meadows Country Club, a KPCW supporter. Park Meadows prepares seasonally inspired menus in our dining room, lounge, and outdoor patio areas year-round. We also offer members dining menus for social events throughout the year. Social and golf memberships are available. 649-2460 or parkmeadowscc.com.
KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour with the Youth Sports Alliance hosting its Circle of Excellence Award. In the studio to tell us more, we've got Jan Mitchell with the YSA, along with Joe Lauer. He's one of the nominees, and Chris Haslock with Team Park City United. Good morning, all of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So when's the ceremony happening?
It is happening on the 28th of August at New Park Town Center, beginning at 4:30.
Okay. And how many nominees do you have this year?
We have over 100 this year, and they represent the top 5% of each of our 9 member programs.
Okay. And so who determines that?
Each of the coaches submits their own list, and some of the kids are all-stars, and they have achieved at the regional level, and some of the kids are champions that, like Joe, that achieved at the international or national level.
Great. So, I mean, are we just talking competition results, or are we talking GPA results?
Just competition results.
Just competition. All right. So, Hatch, this is one of your athletes then?
Yeah. So one of the categories that doesn't necessarily have to be a competition result is the Leadership Award. And so Joseph is our nominee for the Leadership Award. And something that last year they stepped up a little bit with, the Sports Alliance was able to find some money to offer as, you know, a grant to the kids that won that. And this year they've stepped up and it's gone up to $1,000. So the winner of that award will get $1,000 toward their training. And then there's another one that another award that can be chosen, not necessarily specifically off of a result. And that one's called the Showstopper Award. And at this event, the Youth Sports Alliance is renaming that award to the Sam Jackenthal Showstopper Award. And Joseph can talk to you a little bit about, why we think that that's a good fit.
Yeah, so the Showstopper Award basically embodies someone who can really take your breath away in a sense of either landing something spectacular or having a crazy fall or a great season. And really something that takes your breath away is what Sam Jackenthal does. And he had a terrific season and is always making us smile and really taking our breath away forever. So when I think of this award, I think of everything that embodies Sam.
Great. So that also is a cash prize?
That one's a cash prize this year as well.
$1,000 for each of the awards, and Skull Candy came forth with the money this year.
Awesome. So, Joe, you are one of the nominees, or are you the designee for the Leadership Award?
I'm just one of the nominees. Okay. There are so many really, really talented athletes that are in for this award.
Okay. So tell us just a little bit about your career. You competed internationally then?
Yes. So I'm a slopestyle skier. I moved from New Hampshire 3 years ago, met Hatch, and got my career started, and I've been competing nationally and internationally.
Okay. How many other nominees do we have then for the two awards?
There are 5 for the Leadership Award and 4 for the Showstopper.
Great. And then again, those are put forth by the coaches?
Yeah, each team gets to put forth one nominee. And it's something where we only put forward a nominee if we have someone that we really feel fits. So, obviously with, this year was an interesting one. We had a lot of people that we felt qualified in both categories, and so it was a tough challenge. And we picked Joe for the leadership, and Troy Pavelsak is who we chose for our showstopper.
Yeah, can you tell us about some of the others? Do you know those off the top of your head?
Not.
No. Okay. Anything else, guys?
No, I just think it's an awesome thing that Youth Sports Alliance does this every year and gives a chance for our community to recognize the top 5% of our community. And as you know, we have so many great athletes here. And I'm certainly anxious to hear about the results. I don't know if you've heard yet. I hear you on the radio talking about it, about our rower that's at the Olympic Games, hopefully rowing today. But
this morning, yeah. She didn't make it into the medal round. They go into what's called the final B.
But yeah, we're so blessed to have so many fabulous programs and fabulous athletes in this community.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you have 100 into the top 5%, that's pretty impressive.
Exactly.
Yeah, and there are multiple more that could be in that 5%. We have so